Fucking take five or seven.
Take five.
This is your boy Mzed.
It's your boy Vumi.
And this is once again the Must Chats podcast.
Not once again. This is.
Yeah, once
this
again.
This is it. This is the real thing.
This is it. Here I stand. I'm the light of the world.
See, I didn't even know that. Of course you were going to
say. Yeah, dog. MJ, dog. He actually just had a birthday.
So. Yes,
shout
well.
Out, shout out. Yes, he did. You know, not.
Birthday? Really? Can a dead person have a birthday?
Yeah, because that's when they were born.
Yeah, okay, but like,
No, there's no two things about it.
It would have been their birthday.
It still is their birthday because they were born that day. Fam, do you not understand what the concept
of
birthday?
No, of course, yes, they were born that day. So then? But like, anyway.
No, explain.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, because you know you ain't
no,
got
no,
shit.
No, because I ain't got a lot of
dumbass
shit.
Dumbass motherfucker. Stupid ass. You bitch ass.
Hello, where do you get that from?
Okay. All right, let's go.
Okay, let's move on.
Anyway, let's start with the flamey topics.
Flamey topics.
So this past weekend, remember we left the last episode. Anyway, oh by the way, 50th episode this is. That's 50th. Why we are recording. 50th.
We are recording 50th it. I forgot episode. We're recording it.
We're gonna put it up on YouTube. Down the whole time. I guess you can already see it on
yes.
YouTube. But yeah.
Yeah. So we're gonna create a channel.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna do a Much Chats channel. Anyway, so last week I left. Remember, I was excited about going to a concert.
Yes,
it was a Shane Eagles concert.
Shane Eagle.
So here's the thing. I went with my lady, right? And yeah, we both into Shane Eagle. You know, the album was dope.
Enjoy. Sure, you are.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now,
that's what makes you.
So we went. So we went there, and things started. It said that it starts at 7.
Yeah.
So 7 p.m. which is kind of early, you know, for a hip hop event.
Yeah, but then you know there's going to be a lot of opening acts if they say it starts at 7.
Well, I mean, you don't necessarily know that. You just know that there's going to be, you know, acts that will be open, but you know, you don't know. Regardless.
Okay.
You expect to see a you know, Shane Eagle in like 2 hours or something, you know, something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's what I mean.
So in any case, like, we're leaving at like 7, quarter past 7, because we're thinking we're late, because we want to see the acts, because we heard Youngster CPT was there.
Yes.
The guy you love.
I wouldn't say loved.
How did you love that guy?
I appreciate the diversity he brings to South African hip hop. That's all, dog.
The diversity he brings to South African hip hop.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Huh? He brings Cape Town, and I'm not talking about. Cape Bay,
no,
Cape Town.
No, he brings
in Cape Flats, Cape Town into this SA hip hop scene. We can't have all these skur and pop bottles niggas. We need to have some Cape Flats niggas.
Yeah, sure.
We need to have the Latino of SA.
Don't do that. Huh? Don't do that.
What do you mean, don't do that?
No.
No, they're definitely the SA Latinos, dog. What are you talking about?
Draw the comparison. The only reason why you're drawing a comparison to them is literally because.
Huh?
Of the hue of their skin color.
No, actually,
let me finish. The hue of their skin color, also the fact that we are sort of bringing them into the hip hop culture. That's the other connection.
What do you mean bringing them into the hip hop?
Like
culture?
Latinos, like they are like
they're definitely for the hip hop culture. Yeah,
they're
like,
but they're visitors in a sense.
They're not. What are you talking about
in the hip hop culture?
How? Yeah. Latinos are very much part and parcel of the hip hop culture, dog.
Yeah, now they are.
No, not now. They've always been, dog.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that they've always been.
Yeah, because there's been a lot of cultural mingling between Latin Americans and African Americans in American urban scenarios.
But maybe when you say this, they might have been in it, but they weren't popping the same way blacks were popping.
They were popping, dog.
The same way blacks were popping hip hop.
Anyway.
No, I'm asking.
No, but that's what I'm telling you. It's like, but why are you negating their existence?
I'm not negating their existence. Wow.
But you're saying we're bringing them in. They've been there. Maybe it's because they don't have the numerical advantage that they do.
Hold on. Do you think that kind of people have always been included in the South African hip hop environment?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
are you kidding me right now, dog?
No, I'm not. I'm asking a question,
you
dog.
Remember, you know Ready D?
Yeah, I know Ready D.
You remember the group they used to? Because I don't remember it. No, I can't get it. There was a group.
No, but they were so huge, right?
Why
would you ruin them?
What were they called?
Dog, I know Ready D, though.
Yeah, but he was in a group during the 90s. They had a hip-hop group.
Okay, sure. But what I'm trying to tell you is that I only knew Ready D. I didn't listen to that hip hop
because it's not our generation. I'll give you that. But the thing is we can't exclude colored people from the SA hip hop.
Stop! Don't go to the whole. I'm excluding colored people from the hip hop scene. We're having a conversation.
We are.
So what I'm saying is, in our generation,
yes,
who are the big colored influencers in our generation besides Ready D, who is a legend because we know him?
I'm not immersed in colored culture like that, right, dog. Because I'm not.
But you just know about it, but you're not immersed in it.
No, because this is a qualm I have with South African hip hop, especially with the Joburg hegemony of South African hip hop. It's like people want to pretend as if other parts of the South African social palette don't contribute to South African hip hop. You know, it's like we know that Black South Africans are the dominant culture in South African hip hop because it follows the hierarchy of global hip hop distribution system.
But okay, yeah, right. And here's the thing for me, we like in KZN, for example, we accept that Joburg guys are the hip hop rap guys. We accept that. You know why? Because we have our own thing that we do in KZN type of thing.
So, okay.
It's not negating people from KZN in the hip hop scene. It's just that we know that the hip hop guys in our generation was largely Joburg guys, Soweto. That's what it was.
Okay. But here's my thing.
What's your thing?
With this whole issue is that you're saying that just because they're the hegemonic culture in the industry, that they have to be considered as in they own it.
No. Not that they all I was trying to say is that they weren't the ones that were the most influential in that industry. That's what
I'll agree with that. But what I'm saying is that, like, and for that reason, whenever the conversation about hip hop comes along, or whenever we talk about who the most popular actor or even the content of South African hip hop doesn't address the diversity to which the industry lends a lot of its inspiration. So the thing is, like, for a very long time, people were saying exactly that same thing. It's like, no, you leave hip hop for the Joburg people, or like the Gauteng or northern parts of the country people, and then you maybe electronic music,
yeah,
and DJs will stay for white people and colored people. Okay, I think my
language was the one that triggered you a lot. The fact that I said they were visitors, all right, maybe that was the issue, that was the problem.
Yes, no, I think that was it.
Maybe
yes,
I didn't convey what I meant, but yes, I did say it and I'll own it.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll own it, leader. So but in any case, what I'm trying to say is the hip hop scene is still dominated, of course,
yes,
by Joburg blacks.
Yeah, of course.
Even though there's many KZN blacks, Cape Town, I don't know about blacks. Cape Town blacks who do rap. Blacks. I don't know about them, but I don't know about that.
Ratex. Ratex. But he's not like big. He was big for a while because he had that nice album. But
Ratex.
Ooh, Ratex, yeah.
Who the hell's that?
You don't know Ratex, dog? No, dog. He's from Khayelitsha.
Nah, I don't know that guy.
Ura,
I don't know Ura, dog.
Oh, what?
Okay, sing a song. A hook. You have to rap, just a hook. Give me a hook.
No, he's a rapper from my culture.
Okay, give me a hook.
Like, we can play a song of Ratex right now.
No, we don't have to do that. We'll do that later. But what I'm... Anyway.
Okay.
The point is, we're at this Shane Eagle event, right?
He's even on Spotify. Yeah.
Adword. So we go to Shane Eagle. Line is long for days. And I was like, no ways, man. It's already like 7:30, 7:45. You know, the line is long.
Yeah.
And we stand in line. We're like, fuck, it's cold now. It's windy. I go up to go check, you know, if anything's happening. The venue is empty, fam. But there's a long line.
Huh?
Venue is empty. Like, there's like 10.
And where was this venue?
In Pardon Island.
Okay.
Anyway, so like, and then they're scanning the tickets like slowly. And my thought was that, oh, okay, they're doing this on purpose, because I see Channel O banners and all this stuff.
Okay.
So, and there's guys with cameras outside like interviewing people.
So they're trying to make it look like.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, I won't knock the hustle. Uh-huh. That's how you do it.
Okay.
You know? Bruh, people are out there smoking weed and then, like, it was very relaxed. You know what I mean? Like, people were smoking weed in the line. Like, you could just smell all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying? Like,
everyone was
doing it, bruh. And yeah, it was just hectic, but it was cold. Anyway, we got worked our way inside. All right, okay, we're inside, cool. We go buy ourselves a drink or something. The DJs, they lit. Like, the DJs are playing nice music, starting to fill up. Not a lot of people. First act is probably like at 8 o'clock, half past eight.
Yo.
And it's a DJ, another DJ, I think. And then at about 10 o'clock, no, half past, about 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock, half past nine. This lady called something Monroe.
Monroe.
Yeah, she has a song that's called Reminiscing.
Anyway, but I know who you're talking about.
But yeah. But she also reps like Cape Coloured culture, like boss. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And she came out there. She was all about it. You know what I'm saying? And she did her thing. I won't lie, I did not enjoy her set. If I had to be like, I couldn't hear her properly. She was rapping and singing. And then I recognized the song when she was singing, reminiscing. I was like, oh, word, I know the song. Like, it sounds nice and stuff. Then she did another song. She brought a dancer on. And I was like, okay, I see why you opened it.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah,
man. I mean, like, and shout out to Shane Eagle for putting her on, you know, like, onto the, you know, for people to find.
Because
I wouldn't have known her name. I wouldn't have searched for her afterwards. You know what I'm saying? So those
I think
are good
things. She's had a couple of songs with Paxton, the Idol's winner.
Wow, dude, I don't even know
how.
Don't mention Idols to me, dog.
But no, she's seen a lot of success after Idols. That's
Paxton, yeah.
No, Paxton.
Is that a woman?
Yes. From Kells River.
Don't
like, you really need to embrace some colored culture, I'm saying.
Dude, I only know. Nah, but dog, that. Nah, man.
I'm like, you're exposing yourself here.
Ah, dude, it's fine. But this is who I am. I'm exposing.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I'm not gonna out here and like fake it. Like, you know.
No, I'm not telling you fake it. I'm saying embrace it. Yes, sir.
No, how am I supposed to embrace something I don't know, dog?
I'll get to know it then.
No, I must go out and fetch Paxton now.
Yes.
Damn you, man. I'm definitely not doing that. No. But in any case, dog. Like, so yeah, we, you know, in our mind, we're thinking, yeah, you know, he's gonna come out at like 10, you know, or half past 10 or something.
Yes.
Yo, sure. She. So this Monroe, she gets off stage or whatever, and then a DJ comes on. I'm like, how? Another DJ.
It's nothing worse than a DJ after an opening act. You're damn, like, oh, we're DJ warmed up now. Give us something,
bruh. For like, and so now it's like, it's like half past 10. This DJ comes on for an hour. Where have you heard of a DJ playing for an hour?
For an
dog?
Hour?
And DJ, we don't know.
Like, were they seats at least, or was it all standing, dog?
Thank you for bringing this up, because this was the other shit, dog. Everyone. That's another thing about when rappers want to do shit by themselves. Organize stuff. Because he organized, obviously, like, his Eagle Entertainment or whatever, he was doing everything by himself. You know, I'm the independent, the whole independent thing. I won't lie, that time the independency failed us. Because there was no seats, there was one bench. It was outside by the entrances.
Yeah.
One bench, and it was for drinks. For when people walked out,
so,
they put their drinks.
So there
in.
Was no
There was no seating. Way to sit, dog. And it was cement on the ground. This is a warehouse now, fam.
Yes.
Cement. There's no way to sit, like, as if maybe there's wood or something. We can sit on wooden floors or something. Nah, just cement, dog. No chairs. I think probably there was like a corner.
And it was cold this weekend, last weekend, wasn't it?
Yo. Like, our feet were so sore, and we're like, nah, but, you know, for the culture. And that was actually, the demographics in there was like, it was like a good 70-30. 70-29-1.
Huh?
70% colored,
okay.
29% black, 1% white.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? I'm comfortable as fuck, yeah. Like, I've never been so excited to be in a room of just people of color, like when I like at a concert, because I mean the concerts I've been to this year and last year, yeah, it was just a lot of reds and stuff.
Okay,
but in any case, it was
I don't think I've been to any concerts this year.
Yeah, don't worry about that. But in any case, it was a very nice.
Yeah,
it was a very nice environment to be in. Felt home, you know.
Okay, so when so what time did he come on?
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So now, first of all, now, okay, you know, we cold outside, we get in, okay, fine. DJs, now the DJs are just playing. Now it's like, now it comes to like 11:30. We like, nah, B. 11:30. And that's when, guess who comes out? Youngster. Youngster comes out, and yeah, then everyone, okay, people are excited, okay, and work. Okay, yeah, but also like, nah, fam, this ticket definitely says this is the yellow tour, right?
Mm.
Shane Eagle, we came to see him. Yeah. Like, people had to leave, like, because it was open to all ages,
yeah,
right?
It gets very late, yeah.
People had to leave without even seeing Shane Eagle, dog.
That's shocking.
Because parents were outside picking up their high school kids and stuff, like, because they had to go home, mm. and people were so sour. Obviously, everyone else could obviously stay.
Mm.
And Shane Eagle only came out at like 12, dog. And I was like, nah, that's too much even.
That's
too much.
That's 5 hours.
This is the, and it's a room of like 500 people, right? A room of like 500 people. Like, it's not like you make... nah, man, I just didn't enjoy the fact that he made us wait for that long.
No, that's shocking.
And in any case, like, and by the time then, like, our feet are sore because we can't sit anywhere. And yeah, man, anyway, he comes out. But hey, look, because I really like this guy's album, he came through.
Oh, did he perform well at least?
Yeah, he performed well in terms of vibing with the crowd.
Uh-huh.
He came out with an orchestra, but like he had a guitarist and
did he explain himself? Did he apologize for coming out late?
No, dog. This is hip hop. These guys, they do what they want, bruh. So he didn't anyway, but he came out and he was just complimenting, you know, I do this for you and all the same stuff that people say.
We're
like, yeah, just play, just
get on with
get
it.
On and dance, nigga. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So and he did it, right? He brought it. I really enjoyed his performances. He even at one stage got into the crowd. He's like, yo, we're family, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to get close to my family.
Like, fuck, maybe wait 5 hours. Like, he better get close to me.
He gets into the crowd and he just raps a song amongst them. Mm. Yeah, I took a couple of videos. I'll show you. But yeah, it was a really nice performance. But yeah, and we were just really tired. Our feet were sore. We just left. Like, he had like one more song to go. It was the end of the song and then we were just leaving. And Speedster came on after him, but we ain't got time
for
a DJ after. Who's gonna listen to? I mean, I think people stay, but like, I'm not gonna stay for a DJ just play me tracks
unless you're like extremely lit. But
yeah, like I'm
no one's gonna stay that long.
Nah, I'm not gonna do it. So that was it, dog. Mm. Shane Eagle, and yeah, I was just like, wow. That was very unorganized, in fact. I think it's in the name of being independent. And sometimes
I just think it's bad organizing.
But the thing is, you can't do it on your own sometimes. I mean, first of all, you got one album out, right? You're obviously not thick in the game like the other seasoned guys who know about all this stuff. I'm sure he's trying to learn it, but like at the same time, like you got to think about your fans and their well-being and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Do you know what I mean?
No, that's true. That's
true. You gotta stay in the focus. Stay in the thing, dog. You keep moving.
All right. Why are you stressing? Why are you so serious?
I'm not stressing, dog.
Okay, so my flamey topic. I don't know if you've seen the new Nando's ad campaign.
Saw that.
Talking about flamey topics. Flame grilled shit! So they took Absa to the cleaners, basically, in that ad campaign. They mocked the new logo. Like they... yeah. And they were busy burning things because they were mocking the whole Africanacity kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it was just brilliant. I don't know, man. This, Saatchi and Saatchi, yo, they've struck gold at Nando's, man. They must have some crazy-ass creative team in there.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure there's like a team that's just dedicated for Nando's.
That's insane.
And they just
do
Nando's ads.
Yo, but like it just
but, yeah. I saw it. I think it's quite it's quite long actually that ad.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a pretty dope ad. I saw Coolie Chana in there. He was also in that ad, and then what was funny in that is like because Absolute is like endorses Coolie Chana.
Yeah.
So on Twitter they replied to the Nando's ad, and they were like, "How Kulichana?" And then, you know, and then people were like, "Oh, so he left? He left? Absolutely." And he's like, "Nah, absolutely, my family or whatever." So, but yeah, and then I just saw recently, like yesterday, or I think it was yesterday, Absa put out a tweet.
Oh, did they? I didn't see that.
For me, it was the wackest thing on earth. They were like, yeah, they had a picture up of like two pieces of chicken, or like two legs and thighs, you know, of a chicken, and it said 89 Rand, and they were like, yeah, something about we understand, instead of getting some chicken for 89, can open an account for 59 Rand or something. And it was like, so like, wow, this is a serious fail. Like, you guys are doing, you're doing this on purpose now. You know what I mean?
Shame.
Yeah, like, it was really, it was just terrible, bruh.
Oh, that's such a shame. And they probably thought it was like the best thing ever.
Look at that thing.
Ah, I'm looking at it now. Hashtag more SA flavor is great, but hashtag more SA value is fire. Get a flexi value bundle bank account for only 59.52 Rand per month. After all, it's cheaper than chicken, and they've got like two chicken. Look, the thing is, if Nando's had come at them in a tweet, I would have been like, I would, this is an appropriate response. But you can't respond with a tweet to a whole proper ad campaign
with a photoshopped, not even well photoshopped,
like, look, this looks like the chicken used to get in a race. Maybe that's the point.
But no, you're not supposed to think through it like that. You're not supposed to. You're not supposed to go into it like, oh, how are you going into it?
Yeah. Like, they tried. They got 684 retweets, 1,000 likes.
Boomy, this is Absa.
Yeah, but you know, Absa is the old people bank. This was FNB, completely different. And
do you know how many young people have Absa bank accounts?
Is it?
Yeah.
Do they have a good student card or something?
No.
No. Oh.
They don't.
I don't know. I think Absa just gets a raw deal. Speaking of ad campaigns.
Wow, goodness.
This ad campaign has given us a wealth of memes that surely isn't over.
It'll be over soon, dog.
Nah.
It's the internet, dog. Nah. Things will
nah. Our beloved Nike. Nike. Beloved Nike. As they say in the US.
It's Nike.
You don't isn't it Nike? It's Nike.
No, yeah, Americans say Nike. Yeah, I mean, it's Nike.
Look, it's an American company.
But still, we say Nike, dog.
Nike. Okay, so Nike.
You're saying Mikey. You're saying Mike.
Mikey. Nike. Mikey, Nike. Nike. Okay, Nike.
Hike. It's not a hike.
Hike.
It's not a hikey.
It's a hike.
It's a hike.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So Nike is being all hashtag woke. With their new campaign, sponsoring Colin Kaepernick. Actually, I think they're bringing back their sponsorship of
no,
Colin.
They've always had them on the payroll.
Oh, so yeah. They didn't cut him.
Yeah, they didn't cut
okay,
him.
Okay, cool. So yeah, so Colin Kaepernick is Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Kaepernick?
Kaepernick.
It's Kaepernick.
Colin Kaepernick.
Colin Kaepernick. So your boy is now the new face of Nike's hashtag woke campaign. No, not Nike football, just Nike.
Hey, dog. Yeah.
It's him
amongst other people who are the face of the 30th anniversary for Nike.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So it's a campaign that they're just showing a lot of their artists who are, you know, changing the game or whatever the case may be. And yeah, they're showing this series of.
So the tagline that's got everyone talking is that it's his face in black and white, saying, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything."
Yeah.
So obviously referring to the loss of his career. For him kneeling during
and it's a rap for his career, yeah. His football career rather.
So it's a rap, and also a lot of his endorsements. So I mean, he's lost a lot. Through his social justice
campaign. He's lost a lot for standing up for something.
So what do you think, Doug, about this capitalization or commercialization of a social justice movement?
I think sometimes the pros outweigh the cons.
Okay.
In other people. So let me say it like this. Although we know Nike as a capitalist company, they very much exploit a lot of people in different countries that manufacture their products and stuff like this for cents on the dollar.
On the dollar.
And we know this for a fact. Mm. Yet a lot of people will still go and cop those Jordans, right? Because that's
And apparently white Jordans. People have been burning the shit. Well,
yeah.
Patriots.
We'll get to that though. But so in other words, this move by Nike, yes, Nike ain't shit in many aspects, but it doesn't mean that will absolutely desecrate what they're doing here. Like, I think we can accept this at the same time as saying, yeah, Nike, you still ain't shit for the other stuff that you do, like being a capitalist company that just exploits.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Because we know this is, obviously, they're exploiting this. You know how many shirts people are going to buy?
Yeah.
You know how many, apparel and shit like this? Like, it's obviously going to be a big thing. But I think it means a lot more when a big company like that, who doesn't have to do that, that's the thing, they don't have to do that, they still do it. Of course there's going to be monetary returns in that sense,
yeah.
But I feel like,
do you think it cheapens the movement? Do you think it cheapens his message?
No, because I think because of Nike, more people can listen, can even if they don't receive it, they have the opportunity to hear it.
Okay.
So in other words, it reaches more people.
So the thing is, like, it reaches more people, but is it reaching more people for the right reasons? Because now, you know,
I think the means justify the ends in this case.
Okay. Because the thing is, the way I'm seeing it is, like, you know, everyone's now talking about this tagline, and obviously most people know what it's basically referring to. But I think what's absent in this whole conversation is what he was actually fighting for when he sacrificed everything. So we're not talking about police brutality. We're talking about the loss of everything for Kaepernick. We're talking about how...
But it's the same thing as... you really got to say...
Kaepernick?
Yeah. So it's really the same thing as when politicians were making it about the flag and stuff, right?
Yes.
And a lot of the news channels and stuff, they were all talking about Trump and how he was doing this and how people are boycotting it and not going to the actual reason as to why he was actually kneeling for the national. So you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
not like it's a, that this wasn't happening in the first place. Mm. Obviously everyone's talking about this now, but I'm pretty sure if someone is like if someone who doesn't know, they're like, Why are people getting all excited about this guy Kaepernick? Or what did he do?
Yeah,
someone might say, no, he was kneeling, during the national anthem, and they're like, so Nike is supporting someone kneeling, and then you like you open a dialogue in that
okay,
sense.
I
you know
see
what I'm
saying?
And like, no, he was
saying.
Actually, you know, standing up for for you know, police brutality against unarmed young black men.
And women.
Yeah, and women. But so, yeah, I think that this justifies the end. The conversation that's going to be had. That is had. Because we all, I mean, everyone in our circles, we know it, right? We know what he was doing.
Yeah.
So I think it's more about those who didn't. And this is also just selfishly, though, but also rightly enough, that Nike is aligning themselves with him, like, in a big way. Yes, they were still paying him during all the debacle, but now they even more, you know, saying that no, we're backing him in any case. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? So it's up to him that he can continue his story as well. He can continue the fight, you know?
Yeah, no. So I mean I see where you're going with this.
But what do you not believe that this is Nike should be doing this?
Look, a company's gonna do what a company's gonna do. And the thing is, like, Nike, like Coca-Cola, like a lot of these very successful global companies now, are very good at this. And the thing is, like, I mean, we can argue until the cows come home of whether it's a good idea or whether it's a bad idea or whatnot. So it's going to invoke different feelings in different people.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I won't lie. Sometimes I'm a sucker for some, like, especially if you watch the full commercial, right?
Yeah.
It will raise a bit of goosebumps. You'll feel some sort of way, but then, you know, that's the business. There's science that goes into this. There's, especially now that I'm in the marketing profession somewhat.
Oh.
You understand.
Is that
things.
Right?
You know, you understand the science behind these things.
Yeah.
So the thing is that, like, we can take out different things from it. And I think because things are complicated, life is complicated, society is complicated, so there's a place for this. But the issue is that the hypocrisy here, right? So we talk, they're supporting Colin Kaepernick, but the thing is that they are probably committing worse, if not equal, crimes in countries where they have their production lines. I'm not saying they are, but symbolically, social justice wise.
But that, but that's what I'm saying. For me, like, does that mean that if someone, if it's that, it's like that whole, I don't want to equate it to that, but it's like that whole Robin Hood thing.
Yeah.
Where you steal, you're stealing from the rich, right, to give to the poor. Mm. Yes, you're still stealing, which is wrong, but you're also doing something right in a way by giving, right? So does that mean that Robin Hood should actually not do that, so the poor will get nothing out of it anyway?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a really tough thing to balance out.
No, it is. That's why I'm saying it's not, it's never simple. It's not simple.
Because
it's not,
you can't be just simple. Be like, Nike must never do anything
good. No, that's what I'm saying. It's never simple. But for me, it's cool. I'm like, weird. Look, honestly, the whole thing around this kneeling during the national anthem, I think it's one of those uniquely American things that it's so perverse, you know? They're so obsessed about their patriots. Like, here...
Yeah, but they push that stuff because it they need to. Like,
yeah, that's their rallying cry. But like, it's a bit silly to me. It's like, you guys have so many other things that y'all need to deal with, and here you are, this guy's kneeling, and a lot of people are like, oh, he's disrespecting the troops. And then a lot of people are coming up with stories like, oh, the troops are disrespected by their own government, let alone Colin Kaepernick or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things where it's like one of these uniquely American craziness things where it's like, that's your cultural realities, y'all need to deal with that shit. Because I mean, like, the national anthem, yes, they invoke certain feelings, I won't lie. I sing the Greek national anthem, and particularly Africa will does things to me too.
Yeah,
but I'm not gonna give a fuck if someone lies. How in SA we have whole segments of stadiums that stop singing one part and other segments that start singing another part. And that's okay. That's who we are.
You have the right to do that.
Yeah.
As well. Like,
yeah. And there's another segment of the stadium that's going to mispronounce the one section.
And be like, no, dog, you're disrespecting the SANDF right now.
No, it's exactly. That's the thing.
It's going to say, how dare you disrespect the SANDF? Yeah.
Probably during apartheid, Reds were telling themselves, don't do that. You're disrespecting the
SANDF. But can you imagine that happening? Yeah. Can you imagine that, for example, maybe people stop singing the Distem verse, right? And then you have people saying, how dare you? How dare you disrespect the people who are fighting?
It's not going
to
happen.
Can you imagine someone telling you that? You're like, wait, what?
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 You know, no, I mean? The thing is, I mean, because look, SA is a patriotic country. You know, people, they're obsessed to, you know, SA people, they enjoy their national identity. But sometimes not the Americans like that, just take it to 11,
man. Because, it's because they, like, they have so, but that's the thing, that because America has that America, right?
Yeah,
they don't have any other identities to
they're
a melting pot.
Yeah.
So that's what they got, and they're gonna fight for that forever. Because if we, like, for example, in South Africa, we can be like South African, but we're like, actually, fuck South Africa, I'm Zulu. Fuck, I'm Swati. Fuck that, I'm Ndebele. You know what I'm saying?
You can
always go to something else.
Yeah.
But with Americans, like, y'all are y'all. Like, that's it, you know.
But but also they have very, very, very not primitive, but very, like, they're patriotic people because they, like, their history is sort of kind of like aligned to that. It's all about being a patriot. I mean, that's been their propaganda,
but
right?
It's because about fighting for your country,
fighting and all this stuff, fighting, be patriotic, and they've associated with being patriotic with respecting the military. So it's a very skewed and weird cultural identity around nationhood that I don't quite understand.
But in any case, look, I'm not gonna say I applaud Nike for doing this, but I don't think bad can come from this.
Okay.
Let me put it like that.
Yeah, okay.
And all those white people in America who
burning
the Nike stuff and cutting their Nike.
Stop polluting the environment.
You do know that you already bought that that stuff, right? You do know that. But anyway,
it's symbolic.
Let them cut it up. They'll be all right. Nike will be fine.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, another thing, dog, that we actually, it's a hot topic right now. Literally, I actually hate to say it literally, but like in Joburg right now, there's a fire.
Yes,
in the
there's
CBD.
An ongoing fire, yeah.
In a huge ass building. There's a lot of things wrong here. Right?
There's crazy ironies, right?
Dog.
It's the building of what?
Yeah.
Who is in that building? Just
water.
Just is it what? No.
Water and sanitation.
Isn't it health?
No, it's water and sanitation.
Is it water and sanitation? No.
Actually, there's a bunch of things in there.
Oh, is there a bunch of things?
I think there's a bunch of things. But the point is, like a 14th, 15th floor or something, in any case.
It looked like the top floor in that picture.
They said it was a 14th, 15th. I don't know if it's the top floor.
Yeah, it's the top floor. And then the picture
but
I saw.
But it reignited like today.
Yeah.
Because they had maybe another floor had started burning then. But so the thing is, the problem here is that I don't know where they got this, but afterwards, obviously, it got reported that, in fact, this building is 21% compliant. I don't know if they mean in terms of national building regs.
Yeah.
Or if they mean, they must mean the national building regs. They don't, it couldn't, I mean, it wouldn't matter if, you know, land use wise, unless they were busy cooking in places they shouldn't be cooking.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they were not but listen to that, 21%. This is a building with government offices in it.
Yeah.
And it's 21% compliant. How does this happen? I want to know is that where'd they get that information that it's 21% compliant? Because obviously that was known before.
Because the municipality didn't, there was someone who did, there was a government department that did an audit. I heard it briefly on the radio.
And that's another thing.
There we go.
So this has been known, right? That is 21% compliant.
Yeah.
And nothing has been done since that was known.
Mm.
And then only now when it's a problem, right? Then what does that say?
It's finally been extinguished.
Okay.
It was 45 minutes ago.
But
yeah,
the thing is, we lost 3 firefighters to this fire. To a building. Four now.
Mm.
Rest in peace to this building.
Mm.
And the thing is, dog, I think the Mashaba and co are out here blaming, the past.
But it is a government
building. Yeah.
Mm.
But what I'm saying is, you can't. You've been here for 2 years now as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, also take ownership for the stuff that's
happens.
That's happening underneath you. How are you going to fix this? And he was saying that he wants to, all these buildings that aren't compliant, he wants to demolish them and have them rebuilt. And he said, quote unquote, we take back the city. Don't know what that means. But
you know, when politicians come in at times like this, I stop listening. And I'm like, it's too late. Your job wasn't done.
He's not a very comforting guy.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, look, he's really crazy. But like, well,
I mean,
he's him. Like, one day these podcasts are gonna come and bite us in the ass. But yeah, no. The thing is, when people start coming, they start politicking on the situation, I'm like, you've lost me already. Like, let's deal with the emergency, one. Let's deal with the tragedy, two. And then let's deal with who is to blame. Yeah. In fact, that, yeah. Like, whenever they start coming out and doing these things, I'm like, nah, man.
Yeah, it's actually, yeah, it's just,
but yeah, really, rest really in peace to them.
And apparently they were really understaffed, the firefighters as well. They weren't well equipped. People are saying that they actually weren't even well trained enough for something like this. You know,
I'm not surprised.
I mean, it's not like this stuff happens a lot in South Africa anyway.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like
yeah. And I see, like, the SANDF also went through with, so hey, they look like they got some very lit fire trucks in the army.
Oh, is that them?
Yeah,
it's very tough. But in any case, man, that's
a tragedy.
Yeah, that is what it is. But yeah, I actually wanted to bring up another thing. I don't know if we should bring this up in hot topics. I don't know where else we would put it. But about doctors and stuff. any medical doctor. So I heard on the radio that I think the health department, as part of the NHI, I think, they want to regulate private doctors in so far as where they can and cannot work in terms of demand. And so in other words, they can say to you, Vumi, you're a qualified doctor now. You want to work here in Cape Town. You want to open your own practice. But the doctor tells us no. You going to Ntuzuma and you're gonna go open up there.
Look,
no, I'm being. I mean, like, I know. I'm obviously reducing tough. It to that, but that's in it's essence tough. What it is.
It's tough because I can see how this is an idea. I can see how this
they're
is
already
an idea.
Because
it kind of already happens.
The, what's it called? The governing body of private. Medical doctors has already said, if you do something like this, we gone. Like all the doctors are gonna immigrate, obviously all, but gonna immigrate because they don't want to be forced into having to do something like this. Is you're forcing the private sector now where to operate?
It's a bit implausible. I get the idea behind it because
it's a lovely idea in terms of. In terms of capacity and stuff.
Yeah, it kind of happens already with medical students, right? You have to go and do your community service.
But we know that that's where it ends.
What I'm saying. Yeah. So the government enforcing private entities or private individuals to do something already happens within a particular framework.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it works pretty well because it gives them exposure to the failures of our health system. So if any of them are politically inclined, they can finally go and fix it. But it also gives them experience in terms of how to treat medical scenarios in relatively rural situations.
Yeah.
I think it's a brilliant idea. We discussed in a couple of months ago how maybe planning should be doing that with rural municipalities. But we've discussed.
I mean, we'll talk about planning in the other segment, obviously, which relates to the political stuff.
Yeah, but we need to start getting to those other segments.
Yeah, we'll get into that. But I mean, this is the last topic.
So it's flaming topics. But it's a bit of a crazy idea when you start talking about now the telling private enterprise where to set up. It's very implausible.
Yeah. I mean, I brought that up. I said that, but about telling them where to set up. Maybe it's not about. Telling them where to open their private firms, but maybe it's about literally telling them, look, you can't practice here in Cape Town. You're gonna have to find in one of a more needy area to practice. You can do your private thing there or public, but there's enough doctors here. There's other places that need you.
Yes. So would that work as in like a direct law, or would there be some incentivization? So you just be like. You'd pay a lot more tax if you decided.
I think it's probably about incentivization. I don't think they can actually
be like. They can't get a license here because
I don't think because that's. I think that might be unconstitutional to do that.
Probably
most likely, certainly, definitely. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. But like,
yeah, that's a bit insane.
It's a bit crazy.
Yeah,
but. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on, bro.
Let's move on to the music.
Yeah, back to the music now.
Back to the music.
Back to the music.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So,
music.
M&M
hashtag back. A couple of things actually. So yeah, M&M dropped a surprise album. Surprise album.
Yeah,
Kamikaze is the album.
Kamikaze.
Why do you think this time it was a surprise?
Because. Well, the thing is, you know what? You know, artists have the right to surprise us because they're artists. You know, their inspiration doesn't work on a schedule as much as
especially in this day age of streaming. You can do that.
Yeah, you can.
I don't think you could do that back in the day with CDs where your album just pops up in the stores.
Exactly.
Without any promo.
Yeah. So, but I don't know, man. I think.
I think the surprise factor was also, like, your boy hasn't had a very successful album in a while. And I think he didn't want the pressure and the expectation associated with it.
I also think he was just hurt. He was sour at the people's reactions of that garbage ass album called Revival.
Yeah, my God.
That thing was trash.
Like,
man.
I listened to it by mistake while I was listening to it on Spotify. I was listening to, like, the old stuff. Then it just started playing some of the new stuff. And I was like, this is garbage.
It was really sore, too. And the thing is, it was really sore coming from someone like Eminem that we know, dog. I mean, we went to his concert 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, 4 years ago.
4 years ago.
Four years ago.
2014. Picture of Master.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So in any case, like, yeah, it was, yeah. So that's probably why he did that, and he was obviously hurt. Like, you don't just drop an album a year after the other, after another, because you know. He knew that Revival was trash. That's why he had to come up with another one.
Yes, yeah, I know.
Because obviously in this album as well, he's addressing a lot of shit, a lot of people talking about him. And I think he's sort of back to his Slim Shady-esque type of rapping, where it's not just about getting sober and all stuff. But it's also not about, like, beating on your moms and stuff, you know?
Okay.
But, like, he's rapping again in a way that people can... In the way that people who love the old Eminem can get with. Rather, let me say that.
You see, because the things I haven't listened to...
I listened to it.
I haven't listened to it.
No, I'm scared. No, you must listen to it. Because the thing is, I was also like that. I was like, I didn't want to listen to it as soon as people were like, it's out.
Yeah.
For the same reason that we don't want the image of the legend of a rapper that he is to be tarnished because of another whack album.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, I started watching... Which is something you shouldn't do. You listen to other people's reviews before you go make up your own mind. But in this case, I think it was necessary. Listen to other people's saying. People were like, okay, they actually liked the album. And I was like, okay, word. Let me go listen to it. And I listened to it, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I won't lie, I enjoyed it. I'm not going to say I enjoyed it like most of it. I've only listened to it twice.
Yeah.
So, and I like it. And yeah, he throws a couple shots at people. Joe Budden, Academics, Machine Gun Kelly, you know, a couple other people, Charlemagne, you know, a couple other people that was, you know, talking smack about him, I guess.
Yeah.
Or his family type of thing.
Mm.
And yeah, man, that was that. But like, I enjoyed the album. I probably won't listen to it very quickly again. Like, I'm not in a rush to listen to it again. But if it comes up, I'll listen to it from the beginning.
Yeah.
And just go with it.
Yeah, I mean, and he started this whole machine game, Kelly beef, and
technically he didn't start it.
You didn't start. You see,
so
that's
let me tell you, like, how it happened. So, from my sources, so apparently, like in 2012 or something, this is when Eminem's daughter was like still 16.
Yeah,
right. Machine Gun Kelly made a comment on Twitter saying, "Oh damn, you know, something to the effect that Eminem's daughter is fine."
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Well, she is,
and yeah, she is. But the thing is, you wouldn't say that 3 years ago because she was underage.
Yeah.
Even if she was, you still wouldn't say it.
Yeah.
So,
I think
that's okay. So that's what I'm trying to say. Eminem obviously got touched.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're gonna get touched if someone talks about your daughter, regardless.
Yeah.
But the fact that she was underage at that is like, nah, man, fuck this dude. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he obviously had words for him. Allegedly, he got him sort of banned from certain places like Shade 45, and he couldn't go to the satellite radio station for Sway. He couldn't do a lot of stuff, talk to some other DJs or whatever, you know. And then when obviously he addressed him again, when Eminem addressed him again in this album,
yeah,
Machine Gun Kelly was like,
caught feelings.
Yes, I am going to get relevant properly now. You know, and he came out with a diss track called Rap Devil or something. And I won't lie, man, that thing, I thought that thing was fire. I thought he bodied Eminem. there was one line where he was like, you filthy rich, but you're still mad. Let's talk about it. Like I was just like, think about that, Boomy.
when you're so rich, right?
Yeah.
But something still, someone like, that's when like the moon barks at the dog.
Yeah.
That's when it's news. When the dog will,
the dog
will bark at the moon forever. Ain't no one bats an eye.
Yeah.
But as soon as the moon goes, then it's news.
Ah,
you know what I'm saying?
You know, just as Drake said way back when the gods get to acting like the broads.
Hey, dog.
Huh?
It bothers me when the gods get to acting like the broads.
I'm like, that line was very disrespectful in so many levels.
Bruh.
He first praises you, then he calls you a bitch.
Oh my goodness.
In the double barrel. But like, goodness. You know, that's the thing. And also then now Joe Budden coming in hot.
What did Joe do?
Oh, you didn't hear what he said.
Nah.
So this is what Joe Budden said.
On
get
Twitter.
Ready. Nah. In his podcast.
No. You're talking about the old album. Because the new podcast hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the old. So listen, this is what this is Joe Budden's views on him as it stands.
Oh, but that's from the old album.
Yeah,
now.
But
just okay.
So, right, in the last 10 years, Eminem has been irrelevant. Let's look at the album he has the albums he has dropped since 2008. They are Relapse in 09, Recovery in 10, The Marshall Mathers LP 2, 2013, Revival 2017, and now Kamikaze 2018. Of all these records, have been sellers. I have no issue with it. But how is the replay value? Are these albums better than what rappers were taking out at the time? What are your thoughts?
He's right. But Recovery was lit.
Recovery was
lit. For me, none of those were lit.
No, Recovery was lit. I understand Recovery. Like I understand what M was doing there.
Like Relapse, but I think I fucked with a couple of tracks, like 3 a.m. in the morning.
But obviously it wasn't the same as like the old Eminem, like
before. No, I'm not. Yeah, but like, look, man, the quality of it, like they was just something.
But actually,
incredibly
to be honestly,
wrong about how you was
Marshall Mathers LP. I won't lie, if that the second one, right?
Yeah.
I thought the thing is, it was the LP hype too. About the fact that the name was Marshall Mathers LP, because we all know what the first one was like, you know. And like, it was very tough to like hate the stuff that Eminem was putting out, but it was nice to see that he was going back to his, you know, blonde hair. People were like, okay, word. But I think Eminem really is irrelevant. But the thing is, he's irrelevant in terms of now. Like, he'll always be a legend. Just
yeah,
like
no,
Jay-Z,
no, no one's taking it like, away. Yeah, but
you're not relevant. Like, no one really. Sometimes, if you think about it, no one really wants to hear from Eminem.
Yeah,
I don't. I'm not out here saying, when is Eminem dropping another album? I'm really not.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying?
That's the thing,
and I think that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, it boils down to that, because you don't see Trey yapping about dropping something. Not that Eminem yaps, you know, but like. Yeah, it's just one, because he was my favorite artist for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
But he just ain't got it anymore.
Like, no, yeah, and that's the thing. And the fact that we have to keep saying, yeah, look, we know he's lyrically sound.
I think the train has reached the station.
And that's okay.
And that's okay.
That's what they need to realize.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
No one's gonna stop him from putting out music.
Mm-mm.
But please, bruh, just don't do it to us. I'll listen to Kamikaze now.
But that also comes to the thing of like of artists, right? Like, maybe Eminem just, I think he just really wants to keep making music,
yeah.
Right?
And that's his right, by all means.
And I think obviously he gets touched, like all artists do. They get touched when people comment on their art.
Yeah.
So.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about it. Like,
yeah, he's gonna
right
keep doing
to
it.
Keep making music, that's fine. But I ain't searching for him. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not checking for him. But look, man, I enjoyed what Machine Gun Kelly put out. Thank you. That was very much
but
enjoyable.
Apparently, he's gonna get killed now, because apparently M's got a response in the works.
I thought he already did respond.
Oh, did you respond?
I didn't listen to, because I'm not interested. Like, I'm not interested further than that. Like, I'm really not interested, dog.
Yeah, look. Ah, M just ain't the same. But yeah, let's
Let's leave that.
Let's move on to Yeah, let's move on to
Politico.
Yeah, some El Politico.
But now can I speak my point, speaker? What is your point? My point is we can't be addressed by the father of Tutuzani.
I rise on
a point of order.
Chair, let's discuss section 25. Now the thing is, we thought that by now the state capture inquiry would have been done, right?
Did we? It just started.
No, I mean, because we were like, last week we were going to speak about it, but then we were like, wait, let's wait until all the interviews and everything has been done.
Well, we were delusional. You know how big this thing's going to be.
Yeah, we were very delusional.
Yeah.
Because in any case, since then, we've had witness... What's it called? Witness...
The proverbial can of worms has been spread across the proverbial...
From Fiki Mentor...
to like...
Let me see, Jonas...
just explosive
to,
revelations.
To... What's a lady named someone Williams?
Yeah, but I know who you're talking about.
The one who was talking about Faith Mutambi and how she... like... ripped scabs of her emotional wounds.
Yes,
like, dog, that testimony was lit.
Like, and you know, it actually it makes a lot of sense. You know, all these testimonies make a lot of sense if one matches it to the climate of sort of this irresponsible, directionless shit that was going on the last 9 years ago.
And I feel like we were actually we're in a state of like paralysis, so to speak.
Yeah.
And once we actually look back and think about actually all the stuff that was happening, we're like, how did we even stomach all of that shit?
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
No, definitely. I mean, it's and you know, and that's the thing, because you know, a lot of the times, you know, during our masters, when we'd have people come and talk, people from government institutions, you know, come and have a couple of talks, and then you'd always sit there and be like, yo, this person's like so motivated. You know, obviously there's the factors, like, I'm talking to lighties,
you need to be,
yeah, but like, obviously you could see that this person like really wanted to do their job.
Yeah,
you know, and then someone would ask that hard-hitting question, like, why is it not being done, or why this or why that, and then you'd see that paralysis.
Yeah,
you'd be like,
it's not up to us.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's really sad for a lot of people in the civil service who actually do want to do their jobs, and they, just as this the Williams lady, you just see that she was literally abused.
Yeah,
emotionally.
And that's the thing, dog. It transcends class. It transcends political positions. It transcends everything, dog. Like, anyone can be abused, and you can get it.
Yeah. So it's so sad to see these motivated individuals, because it's not an easy job being a civil servant. I'll tell you now, man. It's
Here's the thing about being a civil servant, though, right? Even though you work for the government, right? But anyone who for example, say you see the ANC's in government, yeah, and you work for government, it's automatically assumed that you work for the ANC or you align with what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right? So even if you don't, or whatever your political views are, maybe you apolitical, first of all.
Yeah, yeah.
But you just know that, or you can't be, but you just know that you want to serve the people.
Mm.
And you get so much backlash from people who know nothing about what you do, perhaps. But because they associate you with what they see on TV, then you're like, you know, I'm really trying to help these people, but they just, when they see me and they see they associate me with that
sort of behavior, with that rent seeking,
and then all of a sudden I'm corrupt as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Because there's a lot of people, even like local government as well, beloved. Local government, obviously there's corruption at every level.
Yeah,
but local government is where you see the most.
That's
where people
where the rubber hits the road.
And because people, you know, those are the people, some of the, in the front lines.
Yeah.
In the front lines of service delivery,
yeah, dog.
And it's really disheartening when you associate politicians with those people.
Yeah.
Because they are very divorced.
Yeah. I mean, the technocrats are very divorced from the politicians. But the politics needs to be played, but the technocrats need to do their job. And then when one starts affecting the other, that's where you have a problem.
Yeah, but it's all about finding that good balance, though.
Yeah,
right?
You know, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
because like, so
you don't want politicians to interfere, you know,
in the technical running of things.
Which is a very hard dynamic in planning, for example. Because you know, like before the municipal planning tribunal was in effect, before Spluma and stuff, special planning management. What is it again?
Special Planning Land Use Management Act.
There's it. I'm on my mouthful.
Yeah. Spluma.
In any case, before that was done, like a lot of the planning, not a lot, all of the planning applications for building in the environment, for the building environment, those decisions were taken by solely politicians.
Yeah.
It could be, and the thing is with politicians, some of them don't know in principle what is good. They just know what they have been mandated to do.
Yeah.
And what their agenda is. So it left a lot of space for corruption to occur, from private developers to politicians, from residents to, you know, residents who would tell their ward councillors, look, if you don't help us, you know, get all these our approvals for the stuff we want to do, next election you're going to see it's a wrap.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
So it's refreshing in the fact that now there's a tribunal which is put into effect by law. So it's not like you just have people who are making decisions, you know, willy-nilly, but they are mandated by the law. And they have rules to follow. So in other words, and it's people who are in private sector, people who are in government as well, and they make decisions on that, and they can be checked on that.
Exactly.
So I think this helps a lot in that politicians can only come in when it doesn't function anymore on this level.
Yeah.
Where it's an appeal process and now, you know, the mayor must get involved.
Exactly.
Then, okay, sure. And I think, so far, I think it has been working. Whether or not it's been working for everyone, the planning environment affects, that's another story.
Yeah. I mean, it remains to be seen, yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I know we're moving away from, you know, the whole state. But
so the thing is, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where we're getting as much of an inside look as we can into the pervasive environment of rent seeking and corruption that was going on in our state departments, and
it's actually quite it's really
jarring.
Yeah, and how much stuff was actually going down.
Yeah,
and how much, in fact, that Gupta family allegedly took.
Yeah,
from us.
Yeah,
and not only them
as well, all the other, like, now even now they investigate. I think the president just announced a probe into SAP, that German firm,
SAP,
with the water and sanitation department.
Awesome.
There's a probe into. Yeah, I just saw that headline before I left work.
Because you know that the city of Cape Town used a program called SAP.
Yes. But this was in particular with the Department of Water and Sanitation, not the city of Cape Town. So,
but
okay. But so it's not only the Guptas, everyone, McKinsey, all these guys, they were having fun because they were like, we see these boys in there who are not serious. They can be malleable. They're malleable.
Just give them a stack of money. They'll be good.
Exactly. But I mean, I'm looking forward to the rest of this commission. I just really hope it ends up somewhere.
Yeah, I really hope there's
some justice that's served. Yeah. I hope the people who are affected get some peace from this whole process, and I hope that as our institutions and our structures of governance come out stronger after this. Because it's costing us a lot of money.
Yeah.
But
in the greater scheme of things, it's less than what was been taken.
Oh, yeah.
So
definitely.
We have to just, you know.
Yeah.
Rather this, actually.
But,
rather this.
Yeah. It's fascinating to see. And yeah, I think it's one of those state inquiries where it's like, to be honest, the Marikana one, I couldn't follow because I was immersed within studies.
Yeah, hard.
And all that. So that was not easy to follow. But
even this one is a bit tough because it's during the day, right? So it's
You just hear
to work, so you'd have to just watch the news or watch YouTube clips or
exactly,
whatever.
Exactly. But still,
we still have access.
There's
to
more. Yeah, thing. You're a bit more open to those kind of things. But yeah.
But yeah, actually, I mean, just moving on from that, as we're talking about, you know, planning and stuff. So I went to an event, was it last night? Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, a bunch of speakers there. John T. Koga from Dufunukwazi, Brett Heron, who's a MACO member for Transport
and Development Authority.
As well as the keynote speaker was Advocate Thuli Madonse. And I think a golden thread throughout all the speakers was about land.
Yeah.
And because we were being hosted by a law firm that deals with property law quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So when so John T was pretty much like just giving a scope of, you know, a status quo, so to speak, of what the situation is in Cape Town.
Yeah.
And people's access to housing, and not just poor people, but people in general, access to ownership, access to title,
to tenure,
and the numbers are, you know, the numbers are very, very grim.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one of the numbers are that, you know, 25% of the working class or households in Cape Town, rather, can actually afford to buy a 1.2 to 1.6 million rand home.
So that's 25% of 4 million.
Yeah. Can afford to do that.
Yeah.
Other people, everyone else, just, you have to rent, you know, you can't buy.
Yeah.
And that speaks to a lot of things, obviously. It speaks to access to housing, access to the market, the property market. And it also speaks to availability of land, but also the economy. How aren't people able to afford this? I'm pretty sure the literacy rate is nothing to let me not go there, but what I'm trying to say is that there are a lot of people with good jobs, but even if they have those good jobs, they can't afford to buy a home. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And the problem is that because they just don't earn enough.
Yeah.
Because the economy can't afford to sustain bigger salaries.
But also it's a Cape Town thing, because well-located, well-serviced residential property is hard to come by. It's hard to come by for two reasons. One, it's not, I wouldn't say overpriced, but the prices here are higher than the national averages.
I'd say it's overpriced.
So yeah, overpriced, or the market inflated. Because the thing is, the market is the demand is greater in Cape Town.
Yeah, and that's
right. So if the demand is greater, because people, it's a desirable place to live.
Yeah, supply and demand, dog.
Yeah,
price goes up just to sort of push down the demand.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but then again, you like, how does it make sense that people in Cape Town don't earn as much? Property is expensive. People in Joburg, I'm simplifying this, of course.
Yeah.
People in Joburg make more money, and properties are less expensive.
Yeah, but Joburg, the cost of living is a bit higher.
No sense.
Fuel is more expensive.
Why? Because it's inland.
Inland, yeah. So then everything becomes a bit slightly more expensive. But also, it's one of those things where there.
If you look at the difference in salaries, I'm pretty sure the cost of living. No, in fact.
But also, the difference in salaries is because Johannesburg is the economic heartland, right? So that's where there is the most competition for jobs, and that's, companies are trying to attract people there because that's where it's at. So obviously the salaries are going to be higher. But also in Joburg, there is enclaves of property prices. So if you try and buy in Sandton, that's like trying to buy in Camps Bay.
Not that deep.
Oh, Nah, you check prices right now.
Nah, not that deep.
You'd be shook.
Those prices are little.
I know those prices, but I'm telling. Okay,
I'm not saying Santin isn't lit, but it's not. Yeah. It's not even. It doesn't touch, dog. It's definitely expensive. In other words, it's expensive as it should be expensive, but that's expensive as it shouldn't be expensive. If that makes sense.
But why shouldn't that be expensive though?
Why shouldn't
seafront, scenic? Come on, like be realistic.
It shouldn't be because what you're doing is you are excluding a large.
No,
let me finish. You're excluding a large part, a large amount of South Africans.
Yes.
Even those who can still afford. But because a lot of foreigners come here with a lot of money that they can exchange, and it just...
They can offer
more money.
But what I'm saying is, especially, like, let's look at the case of Camps Bay solely, right?
Yeah.
The space is limited.
Ugh, it's mountainous.
Because of the topography and all that. Yeah. So the space, so it's actually a bad example to use. We could use Greenpoint,
We could use Greenpoint. Yeah, Greenpoint all the way.
Yeah,
all the way in.
The thing is, I'm not justifying Cape Town's prices by any means. But Joburg also has its enclaves of high.
No, absolutely. Prices. But no, absolutely. I mean, they have a lot more gated communities as well.
Because probably in the kind of areas that we stay at, we'd be able to get a better deal in Joburg. I do not disagree at all,
without a shadow of doubt.
Yeah, at all. But if we're looking, we're trying to compare the high pricey areas of Cape Town and Johannesburg, I think we'll be surprised.
I don't know.
Isn't the most expensive house in SA or something? Wasn't that in Joburg somewhere? Pretoria, 100 and something million. Some disgusting ugly house.
No, it couldn't happen.
That was some years back though.
Yeah, no, there's definitely. Here, dog, houses are touching 150, 175.
Yeah. I'm not shocked by any means, dog.
That's a ridiculous amount, dog.
The $70 million. That is even a lot for overseas. $12 million for a house. Get out of here. But really, 175 million?
Yeah, 150,
175. Fresne, darling. No, Fresne.
More like those Clifton and not Bantry Bay necessarily, but Clifton and those areas that side. But yeah, dog, it's all about the money. But in any case, just back to that talk. So John T was talking about how, you know, inclusionary housing. It's actually something that needs to be considered with all land use applications.
Yes, yeah.
Enacted by Spluma.
Mm.
And what they found is that it doesn't get done a lot, but the city of Cape Town is actually one of the municipalities that's sort of trying to do that the most.
Yeah.
And we could see that recently by what just happened with provincial land near the waterfront
there, yeah,
where they have
20%
of the bulk will be for social housing.
Mm.
60% is residential, which is good. We always need residential stock. Mm. But 20% is social housing, which is very important for well-located land. Because mostly the people who obviously are the poorer, they live the furthest away.
Yeah.
And they work in the city centers. So this is a step towards it.
Yeah.
And I feel that another point that was made by John T was the fact that if you're going to ask, as a developer, you're going to ask for additional rights than you have. So say, for example, your zone allows for, I don't know, 1,500 square meters of floor space.
Mm-hmm.
You come with a development and you ask for 1,750 square meters or 2,000.
Yeah.
If you're asking for additional rights, you should have the obligation to, in the form of, if it might be monetary, a tax or something, provide for the social housing aspect.
Yeah.
Include that into your development. If you can't include into your development, pay a tax.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
If you're
going to ask for more. And I think that's rather fair.
Yeah.
Even though they should be thinking about that, even though they don't ask for more rights. Mm. I think they still should be thinking about that.
Yeah.
In this day and age.
Definitely.
But obviously, developers think about, you know, the rate of return.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them have, some of them, they just like, they put everything on the line. They need to just make a profit so they can get on to the next one or something.
It's a
hard thing, but yeah. That talk was largely about, you know, that type of stuff, and Brett Herring as well was there chatting, sounding very
passionate,
you know, saying the right things, saying what the people want to hear, you know, typical politician, but he was making some good points and of how they're working on an inclusionary housing policy, and which hopefully will be done in the next year. So as soon as that's done, you know, then there'll be a clear guide of how things should go forward in the Western Cape, or specifically the city of Cape Town. So I think that's something that was really important that came out of there.
That's brilliant, and I think this is why we need these ideas. We need to stop talking about these things and actually start getting some practical solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And obviously, like, Tuli Madonsela was there, and she was talking about the whole, you know, Section 25 thing, about how, you know, what's going to happen. People, you know, especially developers, you know, this is their bread and butter, right?
Yeah.
And she was just really, like, telling them the situation of the matter is that, look, guys, if you have poverty right now in South Africa sitting at 50% or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's a recipe for instability.
Yeah.
You know, land generally means some sort of wealth that can be attained.
Mm.
So they need this type of stuff. The whole change in the constitution will affect something good in some way, because at least there will be an understanding of what can be applied in applicable law.
Mm.
So obviously, once they change the constitution, right, they can't just enforce that. It has just to go to the courts, because you can't just...
Yeah, it has to go through constitutional review.
Yeah, and all that stuff. So, and what she was pointing out is that, listen, the courts have always had our back when politicians are whiling.
Mm.
So think about that. So have faith in... Yeah. Have that in mind that, you know what? Politicians do wile out, but they always get regulated by the courts. So have faith in that branch of government, right?
Yeah.
And that they can actually... Because if it's unconstitutional, then it's not going to fly. Or it's just not going to be implemented in such a way.
No, so, I mean, and these are the checks and balances, right?
Yeah.
These are the very important checks and balances. And the thing is that... Because the things I've always maintained, like, the solution to the land question is having a government that has the political will to solve the issues of poverty. And in order to solve the issues of poverty, you need to have the political will to solve the structural issues with the economy. Yeah. Now, and the thing is, like, it's solving the structural issues, that doesn't only mean redressing the past. It also means addressing the current institutional inefficiencies within government.
Mm.
So it's the things, you have government that holds a lot of land in urban areas, be it provincial or national government, holding parcels of land that are critical to creating more integrated societies, especially in Cape Town.
And the problem is that they haven't been able to do that. So, you know, they haven't been able to unlock that. I think that's what most people's cry is, that
yes,
you have types of land that is available.
So then, that's the thing. So because that's not being done, then people resort to having issues like, no, we'll expropriate without compensate and all that, like discussions that surely need to be had in the greater context of things, but in the reality of a global capitalist system that is overarching, and that if you try and fight will crush you very swiftly. There needs to be realistic conversations around how you can actually, because the thing is, we can expropriate without compensation very easily. You can do it tomorrow, someone can wake up and do it. In fact, it's like people who build informal settlements, and so, like, that is an act of gaining land without being compensated for it. Whether you get chased away in 48 hours or not is
them. Do you know there's a case that she mentioned it. I don't know if it's Memela or something. There was a farm that the market price for that farm was 400,000 rand.
Yeah.
The state ended up paying 1.2 billion rand.
What?
For that land in the court case. They lost.
That's hectic.
And the courts ordered to pay. Like, and I'm just like, because they had disputes about the money.
Yeah.
And it ended up the whole budget of land reform basically went in that one case.
Yeah.
And it's situations like that where they say, you know, do they have the political will to actually deal with these type of things? But yeah, I mean, but just to say, like, yesterday she sort of, I love the way she was speaking. She had a good way of connecting with the audience. She knew, she caters to her audience. She knows how to chat. Obviously, like, she, so like the whole, the room was largely white, largely middle-aged to old people. And she sort of took it upon herself to obviously teach them about privilege in the most easiest sense, and at the same time, while giving them that pill, she gave them a bit of candy with the pill by, you know, saying that I'm also a bit like you. I've also had situations where I've had, you know, people come on my properties or whatever without you know, a proper legal person or whatever.
Ooh, bliss.
Oh wow.
Oh, no ways.
Yeah.
I know it. We have to pause this thing.
Oh my goodness, why is this,
devil?
Please. But in any case, so she was very much chatting the right chat, is what I'm trying to say. So
no, that's, I mean, and these are the sober conversations that need to be had. Around these issues, and it's very easy to have sober conversations if you're comfortable. It's not easy to have sober conversations when your home is flooded every other week when it rains. So that's the reality of things, which is why there's a certain urgency in the
no ways, man.
In the state actually needing to address these things in a very serious way. And I think we're starting to address it with the inclusive housing scheme now at the waterfront, the Somerset precinct there. That's looking promising. That's going to look great. And I think the more of these things that come online, the more the privileged people or the middle and the upper class realize that inclusive housing doesn't mean that they are going to lose their property is going to lose value, or it's going to go to the dogs and all that. I mean, slowly but surely, people will start to realize what social cohesion looks like. Because if you are living two blocks, three blocks away from someone who you're trying to understand, it's going to work much better if that person than a situation where that person lives 20 to 30 kilometers away from where
you only see them from 9 to 5.
Exactly.
You know?
Yep. So that's the thing.
But also, I think the moral of the story is that when you have these conversations, you always gotta have a bit of candy with the pill.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know there's a lot of people who would be like, fuck the candy. We had enough candy. But
that's how you get the pill, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
You know what I'm saying?
No. Definitely. It's disarming.
Yeah.
The summit.
Yeah.
But
But anyway,
let's move on to TIA.
Yeah. You have a nice story. Yes. Back to Africa.
Back to Africa. The continent.
Africa.
But the thing is,
Africa.
This is it's not really from the continent, but it is of African significance.
There's it. It's of African.
Of African significance. So
So SAB Miller, AB and Bev, whatever. So they have announced. So you know the Castle Milk Stout.
Yeah.
Right. The dark beer. Yeah, that dark, the black beer.
The one that only the creamy stuff is nice.
That stuff is, the creamy stuff is bitter, dog.
No, that's not.
Yes, the foam.
It's not bitter.
Yeah, the foam is bitter.
No, that's like the most palatable stuff out of that whole beer, dog.
Maybe we're drinking different beers. But maybe. But yeah, so apparently you can get your clan name on a limited edition round of Castle Milk Stout beers.
Okay.
It's for Ngosaga. You can get your like your family clan name on the can of beer,
but that's quite long.
So what, so I'll show you a picture here.
I think you had it down there.
No, I didn't have it. So you can literally apply and then get your clan name onto the cans.
Onto the cans.
Yeah. There. What is your clan name? Check out our Newcastle Milkstar clan cans and find yours. So there you can get, so literally it's the can and then you've got the clan and then there. Look at that. It's lit, huh?
That's actually pretty dope.
That's amazing.
I thought you were gonna bring up something that's actually like pop, like someone did something about, but this is dope.
No, this is actually legit.
This is our advertising agencies, dog. Yeah. That's what this
dude
is.
Dude,
we have one of the best.
Of the prime exports we have
in the world. Like, there's no other.
Look at this.
There's no other.
I mean, it's amazing.
If this doesn't make people drink this badass shit, I don't know what will.
But I mean, it's great. And I thought, I'm like, you know, these are. Look at this. I mean, look at these. This is that sort of dream, that combination between. That African modernity that we're talking about, bruh.
Modernity.
Huh? That modernism of embracing one's roots organically and seamlessly integrating that into a modern system, into a modern. Because think about like someone who sees this, you know, like, you know, you don't necessarily associate. I mean, look, it's an alcoholic beverage. We can talk about the messaging and the signaling of associating alcohol with blackness. We can get all woke about it. We're not going to do that right now. And what I'm saying is that like it's one of those things where if this can be an example of how we should start embracing certain aspects of who we are and not necessarily divorcing these aspects, but marrying them together, you know?
Absolutely.
And I just think that it's one of those beautiful moments where it's like,
it's a step in the right direction.
It's a step in definitely in the right direction.
And the thing is, this is like great for marketing for these guys as well.
Yeah.
These things will be kept in people's houses for the longest time as well. People keep these as souvenirs or whatever.
And that's the thing. And if, because you know, usually we just ingest these things, and we chuck them out, and they like we don't, you know, and like I mean, yeah, it's being associated with an alcoholic brand. I understand that, but this can also be a platform.
There's no problem with that.
Yeah, there's no problem with that. But I'm saying, just imagine now. Next thing you can now, maybe VW says, yeah. You can now customize your car with maybe your clan name. Or you can get your clan name embezzled in your seat when you're building your new car. You know what I'm saying?
That would be dope, yeah.
Like, or like, you know, or you can get a text or your notebook at school. You go to CNA, you get it customized. You put your clan name on.
Yeah.
Like, things like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Where
which actually links it your... Yeah,
yeah, exactly, you know?
It links your heritage and everything about modern times.
And... It's one of those things where even if you don't associate it with the material thing, maybe it will now get, you know, people who were maybe not interested or didn't have the chance to actually go ekhaya and just talk to like ukoko, talk to the grandfathers and just
the elders, dog.
Yeah, talk to the elders and be like, hey yo. And I'm not saying that you should be gaining inspiration from like Castle Lager, but it just starts, sometimes
that's where it comes from. You know?
And it's about embracing, and you know, and it also alerts the other parts of South African society as to what it means to be a certain part of the society, you know?
Yeah.
And it can also be associated, I mean, obviously with alcohol, you can't associate it with some other subcultures in the country, but like,
I just think it's one of those things that we really need to start embracing, and I think it's a great idea, and congratulations.
Yeah, man, I don't know how this, I didn't notice, you know, I think I saw the beginning of this advert, but I just saw another thing about like another alcohol advert, these guys are just, you know. But yeah, this is actually quite dope.
Really. Yeah, I know they've been doing a lot of good. I mean, we were talking that Black Label thing, the domestic violence, Enough is Enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is that yeah, they're doing like, that's the thing, they're doing their part, even though they know that alcohol
can, like, even be though they do, yeah, it's so destructive. But the thing is,
that's another case of the whole Nike thing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really is. And that's how we're like bringing this episode around, you know.
Nah, word up. Actually, that's a good one, man. Yeah, TIA. Shout out.
TIA.
Nah,
shout out. But also, I want to say shout out to the Business Insider newsletter, man.
Wow.
I get it every day. It just gives you 5 things you need to know about SA business today. And it gives you nice little tidbits, nice little stories about SA. Just things that break the news and obviously business things as well. I'm just trying to look, because this is, I mean, I had seen the advert somewhere, but then I then also read the story on this newsletter, and I just found it very fascinating. But yeah, I can't find it, man.
Yeah, but anyway, shout out to them. Yeah, but otherwise, yeah, man.
So that was
actually, thanks for that segment.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that one.
That was a good one.
I really enjoyed that one, actually.
But
I'm gonna look into that. I'm
not gonna lie. Hey, I want to go to the website now.
I'm really gonna look into
it. But yeah, this has been the longest episode ever.
Yeah, man. But you wanted to give someone. You wanted to do a hustler. You want to do a hustler?
Yes,
let's go.
Alright, so
I feel like hustling now again. Every time you hear that song.
Every day I'm hustling.
Alright, so who is the hustler of this week?
Your fist. What's your boy saying? What is your boy saying?
Yeah, online. Hashtag fill up. That's what he's saying.
What? Hashtag fill up. What's that? What's he trying to tell
me? So here's the thing, man. I think there was this artist who was doing a fill up Giani Stadium. And apparently he filled it up, like, you know, okay. It was successful and everything. And then he got a letter from some lawyers.
How?
Like, how? Is this a noise complaint or something? What?
Hey, yeah, what's the
noise
story?
Complaint? What is it? Safety and security? What's the issue? The issue is that Casper Nyovest trademarked fill up.
So he's trademarked like hashtag fill up or just fill up?
Fill up. So the words fill up next to each other, fill up, he's trademarked that.
What?
Yeah. So now every time someone is scheduled to make money from
using the term fill up.
In any context, I think. Oh, I don't know in any context, but
yeah,
he is due some money. He needs to get paid.
So you're telling me, like, let's say BP or something.
Dog, Standard Bank had an advert, like, at the airport or something that said, fill up. I think those U-Count.
With your U-Count. Yeah,
fill up or something like that. They had to pay him.
No ways.
Allegedly.
Ha! No, thanks.
But like,
man,
the people, like Black Twitter, brought up the receipts. They were like, "Yeah, look, it's registered. They had his address, everything, his name, his full name, like, you know, all that stuff."
That is brilliant.
Yeah, dog. I mean, that's
a true hustle.
You're right when you said earlier, whoever actually gave him the green light to do
that
it,
idea,
or
if, like,
maybe it was his idea.
Like, maybe, but yeah,
it's good. Like, he's getting money for that. If anyone's like, fill up, like, he owns fill up. What the? Actually, now that I think about it, that's insane.
No, surely there must be context, man.
I think if you do it in a way that
it's filling out like a concert or, but if you fill up like BP Shell, all these guys will now be paying him.
Well, why didn't they trademark it earlier? I mean, think about it. Why didn't they?
That is true, actually. It's one of those things that maybe no one thought about.
Yeah, until someone thinks about it.
That's insane.
Then everyone's like, what?
That is a true hustle, actually.
But I think we should look into that, though. This whole idea of when you...
Trademarking, like, what does it mean?
And how... I think there's a trademark act as well. So...
Yeah, copyright and trade probably in the same breath.
Yeah, but there's... shout out to him, dog.
Yeah, look, hustling hard. But yeah, let's get out of here.
Yeah, man. Yeah, jeez, we've chatted a lot.
Yeah, we have.
But yeah, I mean, this was the 50th episode. Yes. So thank you to everyone who's been listening until now.
We are almost in here.
Because of the 50th, obviously, we've
got a video up.
Hopefully you guys enjoy this. But yeah, anyway, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
It's been your boy MZ.
And your boy Vumi.
And this has been the Match Chats podcast. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Peace. Dank.